Bloomberg Audio Studios. Podcasts, radio, news. You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Joe Matthew in the nation's capital here on Bloomberg Radio, satellite radio, channel 121. On YouTube, where you can see us now, search Bloomberg Business News Live and on Bloomberg Originals as we bring it all together. On what is day six now, if you can imagine how much our world has changed since last Thursday. Day six of fighting between Israel and Iran. No unconditional surrender by Tehran, as demanded by the president yesterday. And so we're still in this state of limbo here, floating a couple of feet above the ground, waiting for news from the White House. And the president was certainly asked about it. He found him on the South Lawn a little while ago with a group of workers who were there to install a flagpole. They actually held an event around the flagpole. The president was asked about whether the U.S. will join Israel offensively in its war against Iran. Here's what he said.
I mean, you don't know that I'm going to even do it. You don't know. I may do it. I may not do it. I mean, nobody knows what I'm going to do. I can tell you this, that Iran's got a lot of trouble, and they want to negotiate. And I said, why didn't you negotiate with me before? All this death and destruction. Why didn't you negotiate? I said to the people, why didn't you negotiate with me 2 weeks ago? You could have done fine.
You could have done fine, he says. Now Iran's got a lot of trouble. Trying to not show his cards on this, having spent a good deal of time in the Situation Room yesterday with his national security team, and as I mentioned, the world waiting for a decision here. Whether we hear or see from him again today, of course, has yet to be seen, and whether we get news on Truth Social, all the same. This is big stuff, and Kate Sullivan is covering it for us here from her perch at Bloomberg, White House correspondent. Kate, it's great to have you back. The president's demeanor today was interesting. He seemed kind of tired. Mm-hmm. He had the hat on, which sometimes, I don't know if it's a bad hair day or whatever, but he looked like...
Always got the hat on, yeah. Well, different hats,
white
too.
MAGA hat today.
Yeah.
Group of workers behind him, and he spent as much time turning to talk to them, kind of riffing with them as he was with the press. Is this a moment of indecision for this president?
It could be. You know, I think... What you heard there, I mean, the I may do it, I may not do it, nobody knows what I'm going to do.
How about that?
How about that? Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly no clarity there. One thing that I took away from that exchange, too, was the door is still cracked open for negotiations. And he said, you know, we may meet, and said that the Iranians wanted to, or suggested that they come to the White House.
That's kind of news, right?
That is news. And you know, very unclear whether that's actually going to happen. I think, you know, Witkoff has been leading these discussions with the Iranians. I think that could be a more likely scenario, that Witkoff meets with them. But, you know, at this point, there are reports that Trump is leaning towards a military strike. It's also possible that, you know, once again, we're seeing Trump deploy the same kind of tactic here and making these very public, aggressive threats, but that it's really, you know, what he wants is it to pressure Iranians to come to the table to negotiate. Now,
yes.
So we don't actually know which one of those it is, or if it's a combination,
right,
or if there, you know, are intentions to strike. I think we're still going to have to stay tuned and see what he says.
By design, which I understand, he was kind of laughing at reporters. I'm not going to tell you here what I'm going to do.
Right, and of course, like, oh, I'll give you the coordinates.
I'll let you know what time.
Yeah,
But how is he actually spending his time? We know he was in the Situation Room yesterday. Is he surrounding himself with advisors right now? Is he making calls to other world leaders?
Or is
it a combination thereof?
He is, yes. He said that he's in constant touch with Israel's prime minister. He also said that he spoke to Putin yesterday. Mm-hmm. So he's definitely surrounded by, you know, top national security officials, and he's making calls to world leaders. You know, he has also... One thing that I think is really interesting is seeing, you know, some of these people he's calling, not all of his allies and supporters are really on board with what he's talking about doing here. I think we're seeing a really big clash and tension within the Republican Party on this. I mean, I'm sure you saw this clip that's going viral of Tucker Carlson and Ted
indeed.
Cruz. And, you know, I think that really shows where people are right now on this. You know, the senator, Ted Cruz, is for military intervention. And Tucker Carlson was saying, you know, was sort of grilling him, and Tucker Carlson is not for it, and saying, you know, you can't answer these basic questions about Iran's population, the ethnic makeup, and yet you're talking about, you know, military intervention.
Do you want to hear it?
So.
We actually have
Sure, yeah, we can play.
I guess this whole podcast hasn't dropped yet, or whatever we call the show.
Right.
This is a really important moment, which is why we isolated this as well, to watch the unraveling here. The argument with inside MAGA crystallized in this conversation between Tucker Carlson and Senator Ted Cruz. Let's watch and listen.
How many people live in Iran, by the way?
I don't know the population.
At all?
No, I don't know the population.
You don't know the population of the country you seek to topple?
How many people live in Iran?
92 million.
Okay. Yeah.
How could you not know that?
I don't sit around memorizing population tables.
Well, it's kind of relevant because you're calling for the overthrow of the government.
Why is it relevant whether it's 90 million or 80 million or 100 million? Why is that relevant?
Because if you don't know anything about the country...
I didn't say I don't know anything about
the country. Okay, what's the ethnic mix of Iran?
They are Persians and predominantly Shia.
This just got worse as it went. I mean, that is a moment. As somebody who's had a chance to interview Senator Ted Cruz a couple of times, I've never imagined a conversation like that. Is he finding himself on the outs with MAGA? Where does the line fall between Steve Bannon and Ted Cruz?
Right. I think we're figuring that out right now. It's really interesting how this is playing out. And, you know, I covered every single Trump rally. I went to every single Trump rally. And so I heard all of his campaign promises over and over again. And,
No new wars.
No new wars. And Trump has been very consistent in saying, you know, Iran should not have a nuclear weapon. And he said that over and over again. I heard him say it a million times. But what I also heard him say a million times was the U.S. should not start new wars, should not get involved in other wars. We should pull troops back. We should, peace through strength was something that he talked about a lot. And this, he really outlined, and he's been very, also in his first term, just this, he's talked about this isolationist worldview and this kind of America first, policy. And so I think there are people who support the president, are big fans of the president, and they're watching this play out and thinking, this is not what I voted for. This is not what I thought he was going to do. And this isn't really in line with what he said he was going to do. And so I think Trump is testing the waters here, and there are definitely conflicting Republican and, MAGA points of view here kind of bubbling up.
Well, he seems to be thinking, or the analysis around the White House here, whomever's leaking at the moment, seems to think that there might be maybe a delineation between an isolated couple of strikes against some underground bunkers, and then we're done. Does MAGA see it that way, or we don't have an answer on that yet?
It's a great question. I guess we don't know. I think there are some people who, the Steve Bannons and Tucker Carlsons, who say, let's just not get involved at all, because, it can be a slippery slope. It starts out as one strike or two strikes, and then all of a sudden you're kind of really entangled in, a war that is, in MAGA point of view, a million miles away and has nothing to do with the United States. Right. That's what, they would say.
And you can sleepwalk into a much wider conflict.
Right, and then things escalate.
So he says the Iranians are too late, or it's very late, he said.
Right.
Maybe not too late, but they're very late. Then he says Jay Powell's too, that's his nickname, is too late. He called the Fed chair stupid today. And he, by the way, came back around that he said he hates him, thinks Jay Powell hates the president.
Right.
We're a couple of hours away here from a Fed decision. This is just going to get worse when he doesn't get a rate cut, I guess, right?
That's right. And I think you're hearing Trump sort of brace for that and already saying, I don't think I'm going to get what I want. And the typical, he's been attacking Powell, for months and months. And I think we're just hearing more of the same of kind of, Trump views it as he should be working with me here. He should be helping me. And Europe is doing these cuts. And so why can't the United States do? I think he's very visibly frustrated with Powell, like personally. And that's where all the personal attacks come in.
I'm sure there might be more on Truth Social coming our way. Kate, great to see you. Thank you so much. Kate Sullivan, Bloomberg White House correspondent with us here on the Wednesday edition of Balance of Power. He thinks Jay Powell hates him? Jay Powell's a deadhead. I didn't think that was possible. We have an important conversation coming up next from the Lexington Institute, Dr. Rebecca Grant, on the options facing the president today on Bloomberg.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Michael McKee, I talked to him a little while ago in the newsroom, is on his way over as we speak, and will be at the Fed to ask the tough questions of Jay Powell. He must be sitting around trying to figure out, how do we do this again, right? It's the same conversation at every meeting, just ask Donald Trump. And surely he'll be asked about Donald Trump's insults this morning. He called the Fed chair stupid multiple times and suggested that Jay Powell hates him, said he was political. As we remind everyone that Jay Powell is a Republican who was appointed by Donald Trump. Zachary Cohen at CNN is reporting that there's another carrier strike group that's being deployed. Gerry Ford is on its way. The USS Ford expected to be deployed to Europe next week near the Middle East, putting a third aircraft carrier in close proximity, as he writes, to the conflict between Israel and Iran. Sources talking to CNN about this. We are throwing a lot of equipment at this region. Pretty remarkable. More than two dozen, as we told you, air-to-air tankers already in the theater. We've got the USS Nimitz, the second carrier strike group, already steaming its way. Massive numbers of fighter aircraft are on the ground. B-2 bombers are at least positioned. They can fly all the way around the world with air-to-air refuelers, do a 30-hour mission, come back home, sleep in their own beds in the Midwest. It's pretty remarkable stuff. And all of this, of course, is based around the big question of what Donald Trump is going to do. What are we really preparing for here? Are we going to join Israel's effort against Iran offensively, militarily? American B-2s with American pilots dropping American bombs. As we continue to hear, those would be required to break through the likes of Fordo and the other underground installations. We spent a lot of time talking about this week, and I'd like to just move the conversation a little bit away from this toward the other options. The president is not only looking at this one option. When he's in the Situation Room with his national security team, they are unloading a buffet, a menu of options that the president can use here. That's what we wanted to talk to Rebecca Grant about. She understands the nuances of this better than anybody. From her perch at the Lexington Institute, where she is vice president, Dr. Rebecca Grant, welcome back to Bloomberg. It's great to have you here at this sensitive moment. We've talked a lot about the potential for this happening, and here we are now. And I wonder your thoughts on some of the alternate plans that the president is hearing about. For instance, knocking out power to Fordo, letting the centrifuges spin out of control. What else is he hearing from his team today?
I think President Trump is evaluating a big range of options, but make no mistake, the main thing on the menu here is U.S. air power, probably in the form of very precise B-2 bomber strikes. So this is not a ground operation. This is not a major war with Iran. This is very precise, detailed impacts perhaps on Iran's nuclear weapons capability. And as you suggest, always have to add into that cyber activity, maybe a possibility of Israeli special forces action on the ground, who knows, but they have air superiority there. But really, Joe, we're down, I think, at this point to the weaponeering. So people are coming in to brief Donald Trump saying, if we put this bomb on this aim point this many times, here is the expected damage. Their goal, to make sure that Iran can never have a nuclear bomb and can never reconstitute that capability.
Interesting. Are there other half measures? And if that sort of saboteur's approach to knocking out power, for instance, or a cyber attack, would that also be part of an air campaign? I don't know where this power is coming from at a site like Fordo or at Natanz. How would that be accomplished?
Well, it could be. And what the whole thing tells us is, you know, again, this is not a big regime change air campaign. This is very specifically focused on ruining high-level, complicated machinery that Iran uses. That can be done by having that machinery break. That was done with the computer virus several years ago in one of Iran's facilities. It can be done by denying power or the sort of get a bomb through those levels of dirt and concrete and make enough rubble and disruption of the whole thing. So I think there will be a cyber component to this, unquestionably. I think the question now for President Trump is, would putting a few bunker busters or heavy bombs from the U.S. into that target set, what are the weaponeering effects? Is it going to accomplish what he wants? And is this the right moment to make that strike? There's probably never been a better moment with Iran's air defenses peeled back the way they are.
Well, this is what we keep hearing from those who support the idea. Doctor, we heard from the director of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, was talking to Bloomberg earlier today about some of the potential changes that could happen on the ground while we're in the midst of, what is this now, day six, and whether, in fact, Iran is capable of moving some of this material that we would be attacking. Let's listen to what he said.
In principle, it is there. It is stored there. As you can imagine, at a time of war, all nuclear sites are closed. So our inspectors who are still, I must say, still in Iran, although they are in a protected place, as you can imagine, but they are not inspecting. No inspection, normal activity can take place. We assume we have not seen anything that would suggest that the stockpile has been moved.
Okay, if you had any trouble hearing him, he's telling us that the inspectors are still in the country, but of course they're not at the nuclear sites. They are closed right now. Doctor, do we have eyes via satellites on any potential movement of stockpiles inside Iran?
Oh, yes. We have so many eyes, you know, satellites, aircraft. You know, the Air Force has a particular aircraft that can sniff nuclear radiation in the atmosphere. I have to say, I think Rafael Grossi has really worked hard, not only in Iran, but in Ukraine as well. And at some point, it does come down to inspectors from the IAEA, the UN, saying, yep, you know, the stuff's been moved, or there is no nuclear program left, or here's the damage that's been caused. No, I think he's talking specifically about if Iran agreed to move out the highly enriched uranium and maybe some machinery, you know, the Russians have offered to take it, who knows, how would that take place at this point? But, you know, we'd have to see some sincerity from Iran. To me, that would perhaps start with no more Iranian missile attacks on Israel. But this is all something that President Trump has the intelligence assets to be able to evaluate if Iran is serious or if they're still running around trying to launch missiles.
Well, just as you say that, Rebecca, like clockwork, headline crosses the terminal, the IDF telling us that it has identified the launch of another round of missiles toward Israel. So this continues at this moment. I spoke with Ron Dermer a couple of days ago here, Israel's Minister of Strategic Affairs, and he pointed to American pilots flying aircraft as part of this operation defensively, as we saw last year, firing interceptor missiles at ballistic missiles shot by Iran. What would happen if one of them was shot down?
They have a search and rescue plan in place. It's not easy to execute, but we have extracted people. Believe me, these pilots don't fly without at least a plan for combat search and rescue. Remember, a lot of this is taking place over Iraqi airspace, Jordanian airspace. And yes, we are very involved defensively from Space Force, watching the Iranian missile flares and passing that warning along to our carrier and land-based pilots who are, I believe, looking for drones to shoot down. And then, of course, our Navy that has already done some exo-atmospheric ballistic missile intercepts against Iranian missiles. So we are in there defensively. It's a hugely important part of containing Iran. Second aircraft carrier getting close to nearly 50,000 American forces deployed there as we try to contain and denuclearize Iran.
And another boat with 5,000 sailors on the way. You know, it's remarkable to see the way Israel used drones. You mentioned drone technology in the initial attack, not unlike the way Ukraine planted them behind enemy lines in Russia. We saw that take place with Mossad agents planting drones inside Iran, and they were launched remotely. This is something that we've talked about a lot, the changing sort of dynamic when it comes to the most effective weapons platforms, what we should be buying, procurement reform. And there's an argument here about whether we should be buying a lot of cheap drones to do this or putting very expensive modern fighter planes in the air with actual live people inside them. Rebecca Grant, you've made the case that you need to have actual manned aircraft to get this job done.
Hey, drones are great. We need a lot of them. And the U.S. has used them since the Gulf War to attack enemy air defense systems. But Operation Rising Lion proves again that you need manned fighters carrying heavy ordnance with really smart air crews responding to orders. That's what Israel has used over and over. We've seen manned fighters deployed on the carriers, a new wave of fighters, air crews in the tankers doing that. So, hey, manned aircraft are very important. They will be in any scenario, including facing China in the Pacific. So, hey, a big lesson here is we have got to restock our manned air power. Air Force F-47, yeah. Get the Navy its secret carrier plane that they're about to decide on. We need all of that to team with those drones.
Is this the end of the Tomcat? Did we blow up all the F-14s left? This is what all the Top Gun kids want to know. What happened to the Tomcats, Rebecca? Are they gone?
We've seen at least a few. They weren't in very good condition. That dates back to when we were friends with Iran and they flew the F-14s. We saw at least one blown up. Yeah, yeah. I think they are not in flyable status.
No sign of Tom Cruise behind enemy lines. Dr. Rebecca Grant, it's great to see you. Thank you for the briefing, as always, from the Lexington Institute. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. I'm glad you're along here on the Wednesday edition.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Balance of Power podcast. Catch us live weekdays at noon and 5 p.m. Eastern on Apple CarPlay and Android Auto with the Bloomberg Business app. Listen on demand wherever you get your podcasts or watch us live on YouTube.
The president has already been talking about today, referring to Jay Powell as stupid on a couple of occasions, using the nickname Too Late, suggesting that he should start cutting rates yesterday, and that's not expected to happen today. We'll have more on that a little bit later this hour as we walk up to our special coverage with Kitty Richards, senior fellow at the Groundwork Collaborative. We'll be changing our view on things as we get closer to the decision. We want to stick with the beat on what's happening here, meantime, on Capitol Hill. It is not only a conversation today about whether we're going to see U.S. military involvement in a more offensive way in Iran, and we're going to talk to Congressman Lawler about that as well. But it's, of course, Mike Lawler who has drawn a line in the sand on SALT, this being essentially the SALT network. I know how important this is to our listeners and viewers, and Mike Lawler does as well, because the Senate version from the Senate Finance Committee of the big, beautiful bill just came back to the House, and it's not what a lot of certainly members from New York and New Jersey wanted to see. Spoke about this yesterday with Senator Ron Johnson. He's a no vote on this. He wants to see deeper spending cuts. And when you start talking about deeper spending cuts or permanence with regard to business tax breaks or the Trump tax cuts, you got to find the money from somewhere. And the Senate seems to think that pulling that out of the SALT deal is part of the way to get there. Ron Johnson's still a no vote, though, as he told us yesterday here on Bloomberg. Listen.
Well, I'm currently a no. I think the House bill is something I basically support, but my problem is it just doesn't go far enough. At most, we'll be reducing spending by about $2 trillion over 10 years. We increased spending by more than $2 trillion in 1 year from 2019 to 2020. And, you know, it's a budget reconciliation process. We ought to be talking about numbers.
Well, let's talk about numbers with the aforementioned Congressman Mike Lawler, Republican from New York 17th. It's good to see you, Congressman. Welcome back to Bloomberg TV and radio. It's almost like we're sitting in the same room. If you're with us here on TV or on YouTube, I feel like I can turn and talk to you. Where are you on this right now? It was $40,000, the SALT cap established in the House. It went next door and they chopped it right back down to 10. But I'm told that this is simply a placeholder, and that there's yet another debate. Are you ready to go through this whole fight again?
Look, the bill, as the Senate has written it, is dead on arrival. And I made that very clear the other day when the language came out. But here's the reality of this situation that I think many of my Senate colleagues failed to recognize. At the end of the day, the cap on SALT was nothing more than a pay for back in 2017. And it paid for most of the provisions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. It here again is being used as a pay for by not going back to unlimited. It's paying for the doubling of the standard deduction. It's paying for no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, the expanded child tax credit, among other key provisions, including business tax credits. And we understand that, that is all part of a negotiation. It's all part of having a tax bill that actually provides real tax relief to the middle class, to the working class. This is not about the billionaires or the millionaires. That's why we agreed to a $40,000 SALT cap with a $500,000 income cap. That was a hard-fought, good-faith negotiation that we entered into, despite efforts to roll us. And we came to an agreement with the White House and with House leadership. We are not going back on that agreement. And I think what the Senate needs to recognize, they can make changes, they can enter into negotiations. But the fact is, you need 218 votes to pass this in the House. And there is not a chance in hell that this bill will pass at $10,000, let alone less than $40,000.
So it's anything under 40 is you've I know you've got to talk tough on this because you hear it off the air from Republican members that the SALT guys in New York, they knew they were negotiating. They went for 40 knowing it was going to come in at 30, as the House Ways and Means Committee said. You're a no on 30,000, right?
No. If we were going to accept 30, we would just accept 30. That is a no. And I guess people, want to try and call our bluff. They tried that in the House. They tried to jam us, and we didn't fold. And we're not going to fold here. We're not trying to stop the bill. We are making the point that this was a good faith negotiation. This is the agreement, and this is what the final number is going to be. And I would just remind everybody, you look at 10,000. This isn't just about blue states. First of all, SALT applies to everybody. It's not just particular to New York or California or New Jersey. But second of all, 29 states blew past the $10,000 cap with the average SALT tax burden over the past 7 years. So, leaving it at $10,000 will be a crushing blow to middle class and working class families all throughout this country. And if the objective is to provide real tax relief and grow the economy and allow for people to invest in jobs and businesses and in the stock market, then having a real SALT cap that we can provide tax relief with is vital. And we're not going to cave on this. We're not.
Well,
so this is obviously something
your point's
that
taken. I just wonder, how do you fix it? How do you fix it, Congressman? Does this go to a conference committee? Does Mike Johnson have to carry this water for you? How do you get it back to 40?
Well, look, we're still talking to senators. We're going to have a conversation today. I'm speaking with the speaker. And the speaker certainly understands our position. He agrees with us, even if he doesn't fully support, SALT. He understands how important this is to passage of the bill. Yeah. And this is just the reality of government. You're not going to get everything you want, and you have to negotiate. We negotiated. This was the agreement. And whether the Senate likes it or not, this is going to be the number.
I want to tick through a couple of other important items with you while we have you, Congressman, because you serve as well on the Committee on Foreign Affairs in the House. Where's your gut as, in many cases, Republicans argue with Republicans about what President Trump should do right now in Iran? I know you support Israel's right to defend itself, but do we need to put American B-2 bombers in the air to help finish the job?
I don't think there's any question about that. I think Israel obviously has made tremendous strides over the last few days and really speaks volumes to their military prowess and intelligence. But ultimately, to get the job done, I don't think there's any question, the U.S. is going to have to be engaged. I'm not advocating for troops on the ground. I'm not advocating for regime change. The bottom line is Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. President Trump has made that clear for years. Republicans and Democrats, both prior presidents and in Congress, have made that clear for years. the time has come. And ultimately, we need to finish the job. They cannot have a nuclear program. They have shown a willingness to use ballistic missiles targeted at civilian populations with the express intent of killing Jews and eradicating the state of Israel. Folks have to remember, there are 700,000 Americans that are dual citizens and live in Israel, at least part-time, if not full-time. These are Americans on the ground in Israel being attacked. We have 40,000 troops in the region under threat of attack. We have to make sure that this threat is eliminated. Ultimately, a weakened Iran, a denuclearized Iran, is the best hope for the Iranian people to rise up and reclaim their government. That will be their choice. That is not a choice for the United States or Israel or anyone else. Mm-hmm. But it will give the best opportunity for that to happen. And in doing so, will give the best opportunity for peace and prosperity in the Middle East for years to come.
Wow. The time has come, says Congressman Mike Lawler. If our involvement offensively was limited to a series of strikes, as we've heard referred to, against these nuclear enrichment sites and no more, would you be comfortable with President Trump conducting this on his own, or does Congress need to have a say?
Yes, I would be comfortable with the president making that determination. Obviously, you know, in years past, presidents from both parties have made these determinations in limited strikes without getting congressional approval to do so in that moment. And certainly if that is the decision that is made for the express purpose of eliminating Iran's nuclear capabilities, I fully support it.
Lastly, Congressman, from your perch on financial services, you're wishing there was a rate cut coming today. I'm guessing there's not going to be one. How concerned are you that Jay Powell, as Donald Trump says, is too late?
Look, despite Jay Powell's many predictions over the years, which many of which have turned out to be wrong or late to the ballgame, the fact is the economy is in a very strong position. Inflation has come down. The economy is growing. Ultimately, I think when we pass the tax bill, you get deregulation into effect, you increase domestic production of energy, you bring these conflicts to an end and normalize relations and expand trade, the economy is going to take off dramatically. And I think this is something where the Fed should be looking to ease tensions to start to bring down interest rates, which is vital to economic growth. And I certainly believe that it's time to bring the rates down. I think the predictions over the last 2 months tied to the tariffs have not borne out the way many in the media and Democrats have speculated. And so I do think it is time for these rates to come down.
It's great to have you with us, Congressman. Appreciate that. Congressman Mike Lawler, Republican from New York, from SALT to Iran to the Fed. We're going to be turning things over to our special Fed coverage coming up in a little more than 15 minutes with, of course, an announcement on rates coming at 2 p.m. I want to assemble our panel with more on what we just heard from the congressman with regard to Iran. That was an important moment. You're going to hear that played back. The time has come, said Mike Lawler. Rick Davis, Bloomberg Politics contributor and Republican strategist, partner at Stonecourt Capital, is with us now alongside Jeannie Shanzano, senior democracy fellow with the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress. Rick, how many Republicans does Mike Lawler represent in Washington today?
You know, I think the vast majority. I mean, you know, the Republican Party is still pretty hawkish. You know, in the last year, even before the elections, we had a majority in the House of Representatives supporting aid for Ukraine against Russia. I think Iran is the unifying force. It is the greatest evil empire left in the world. Compared them to Russia and China, we can have a dialogue with Russia and China, but we cannot have a dialogue with Iran. And Iran has been the basis for mischief in the world for a long time. They sponsor terrorism around the world. And so I really don't think there's a lot of daylight between the Republican Party and the need to do something about making sure Iran never has the capability of crafting a nuclear weapon.
Then there's Tim Kaine and the likes of Democrats who want to limit the president's war powers in this case. Jeannie, where are Democrats going to stand if there is an announcement from the White House that American bombers are in the air?
Well, we have heard from many Democrats who support the president in if he does decide to assist openly, either offensively or certainly continue defensively. You know, we've heard Adam Schiff, we've heard others. So there is a split in the Democratic Party. We've also heard Democrats on the other side joining people like Tom Massey. That would be Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar. So very much like the Republican Party, there is a split on the best path forward for this. And I thought another really fascinating thing that the representative said was the fact that he would not support boots on the ground. I think there are a lot of people who agree with Mike Lawler on that. They would allow for support, whether it is aid, whether it is offensive or defensive support, but not support for boots on the ground. And that is a question that has been raised by military experts. Can Israel, can the U.S. really destroy Iran's ability to get nuclear weapons, not just in the short term, but in the long term, without boots on the ground? And that is a big question. And to hear him say, no, I wouldn't support that, I think is also very telling.
Rick, how, if the White House decides to act, should this be rolled out? Does the president need to address the American people in prime time? Is that old fashioned? To what extent do the American people need to be prepared for this?
Well, we do know Donald Trump likes these big moments in a presidency, the symbolism of the Oval Office, the Resolute Desk, is not lost on this president. That being said, I would think it would be always after the fact. I mean, these are operations that are best left in the secret. You know, no sense in telegraphing our punch to Iran. So I wouldn't anticipate the president forecasting his intent to strike Iran, to, you know, degrade his ability to manufacture a bomb and until after the fact. And then I do think, you know, there is an opening at that point to say, okay, now let's figure out what happens next, because it may not need much more attention militarily in Iran if we do indeed use some of our unique capability to destroy these facilities.
Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano with analysis as we wait for a decision from President Trump. Bloomberg Politics contributors, many thanks to both of you for your insights. Thanks for listening to the Balance of Power podcast. Make sure to subscribe if you haven't already at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us live every weekday from Washington, D.C. at noontime Eastern at Bloomberg.com.